dangerously close.
My guest today is Gabriella Lester. Gabriella is a 20-year-old internationally award-winning magician from Johannesburg, South Africa, currently residing in Vancouver, British Columbia. Oh, I love Vancouver. It's such a cool place. Known for her quick wit and sardonic charm, Gabriella has been performing since the age of 10. That's wild. Since then, she's become one of the fastest growing names in the industry. Gabriella is one of the youngest performers to ever do Houdini's daring suspended straitjacket escape at the age of 14. She's also performed on some of the biggest stages in Vegas and is a frequent headliner at the world-famous Magic Castle in Hollywood, California. Most recently, she appeared on Penn & Teller's hit show Fool Us, was featured in the New York Times, and performed over 500 shows in the year of 2023, whilst solo touring in both Europe and North America. What's up, Gabriella?
Hey, thanks for having me. That all sounds so amazing. I sound cool. Thank you.
You do sound cool. 500 shows sounds cool. Oh my God. How do you have the energy?
I don't.
Yeah, that's a great
answer.
I'm
still sleeping now.
Damn, okay, there's 365 days in the year. Did you take any days off?
Yeah, there were definitely breaks in between. There was like the month of November, there was like 50 shows, for example. So sometimes there's months where you just have like jam-packed like six show days. And then sometimes there's a week where I do nothing but listen to music.
Six show days? Okay, I know this is completely different. And I know that being in a band is nothing like, you know, because it's not a solo thing. But like when I was in a band, if I did like a show every week, I was like, this is ridiculous. We got to stop. We can't do this much.
Yeah, there's definitely those moments.
So, okay. I was looking for a movie about magicians to get hyped up for this interview. And I noticed a pattern. Okay. The movie The Prestige.
Yeah.
The Illusionist. Now You See Me. Now You See Me Too. Magic Mike. Magic Mike Double XL. Magic Mike The Last Dance. All the lead characters are male. When are we going to get the Gabriella Lester movie?
It's on its way. It's on its way. No one knows, but it's coming.
I learned some interesting things just from you. Like, I guess it makes sense. Like, just what I was just saying. I mean, obviously, I know that the Magic Mike movies aren't about magic. But I, you know, shout out Channing Tatum. He's a great dancer. I should have known just from like what I was saying earlier, though. Like, if you go look up all the magician movies, it's all dudes. And I guess like that should have kind of clued me into the male dominated kind of sphere.
Yeah.
And what was it like 8% of like professional magicians are women? Is that kind of?
Yeah. That's the current statistic, something around there. And it's kind of always been like that, except it's increasing now.
Yeah, and hell yeah. And also with you dropping like 500 shows in a year, statistically, you're like 50% of magicians.
I'm going to put that quote on my website. I'm like half of magic.
Yes. I mean, just from like work ethic alone, you are half of magic. So you started your magic career at age 10. Speaking of the Gabriella Lester movie, what is the Gabriella Lester origin story?
Yeah. Well, I fell in love with it as a kid, as most kids do. I think almost all of us had a magic set or a friend that had one. So that kind of naturally happened in my life. And then it kind of like came back and forth in and out of my world. And it kept feeling like this thing that I was meant to do. You know, I'd go to a restaurant and the waiter was a magician. I'd walk down the street with my family and there'd be a street performer. And then my teacher was, and then this friend was. And it just kept being this thing that had too many reminders of its existence. And so when I was 10, I saw my first actual magic show by a Canadian magician named Sean Farquhar. And that was like my final hook and pull into it. And then I fell down a rabbit hole, so to speak. And cool. Haven't left it since. It became everything in my life. I grew up eating with one hand and shuffling a deck of cards with the other. And it was all I did. And I haven't stopped since.
That is so awesome. So, I mean, I know this is going to be kind of such of a cliche question, but just when you were talking about shuffling a deck of cards while you eat breakfast, Like, what was like the first trick you pulled off? Like that, where you're like, okay, I actually this trick fully got like landed.
Yeah, I mean, it was some version of a card trick, I think. My brother taught me some and I learned some at school, and I think that's kind of where I started. I got my kind of performance kick in bars. My
Oh,
older brother
cool.
played a lot of sports, so when we were always in like those sports bar pub kind of things where there's a restaurant and then a bar in it. And so I was learning a bunch of card tricks online and from books and wherever I possibly could. And I kind of got my start by going up and doing bar bets and performing tricks for just drunk guys watching sports when I was like 11. And then one day I started doing it, and one of them was like, "I bet $5 you can't fool me." And it started this chain of like, "Oh, I can make money from this." And that was probably the moment. I don't remember what card tricks I was doing at the time, but it was probably in that realm of feeling that adrenaline and excitement from knowing that I could learn this thing, share it to people, and everyone have these different feelings about it. And I generated a $10 a week income, which was pretty high for
Yeah.
me then.
Yeah, hell yeah. At 11? Shit,
Yeah,
that's not what
you
my allowance was, not $10. but yeah, that's good. I guess I forget, like, 'cause you're from originally from South Africa. Kids can go to bars there. I know that's kind of like a
know. Oh, yeah,
European
this was
thing
in
too.
Canada, though. Don't worry.
Oh, well, yeah, I guess Canada's, they've got a European vibe.
Canada's got a chill vibe. Yeah.
Oh, man, so kind of what you were just saying, like people getting, like drunk dudes being entertained as hell by your things. I wonder if you like have any kind of like maybe thoughts and or insights into like the human psyche on that. Like when someone who has a great up close magic trick and they fool me, I love it. It's that, and like normally, like, if someone fools me in a bad way, like if someone was like, if I went to a mechanic and they were like, oh yeah, there's something wrong with your car that's not, I would be infuriated, but like when someone does an amazing like up close magic trick, it's like it brings out like that inner child joy, I think, in just about anybody. Like, what do you think that is?
Yeah, I think it's because it brings out this, like you said, this inner child part of us, as we all loved it as a kid. And it's kind of like the same holiday Santa feeling that you get, where you kind of
Yeah.
know that magic's not possible. And as you get older, you get slapped with more realism as you grow up, and the world keeps going, "This doesn't happen, this doesn't happen." But it gives you a moment in time where you actually can believe that it does. Even if, like, in your core, you know it's not real, part of you gets to just go back to that childlike wonder of not knowing all the answers to everything in the world. And that's a really special thing.
Yeah. Do you mind if I share just a short anecdote? It's a friend of
Yeah,
mine.
sure.
He's not a professional musician. He's, definitely would not be on your level in a lot of ways, but he had a couple just really, really, really good tricks. And actually, I don't want you to tell me how he did it, because I know you probably do. He's no longer with us, so it's one of my happy memories of him, and I always want to think of it as it was really magic and he really could do a magic thing. I went over to his house. We went to go drink some beers on his back deck, and he pulled out a deck of cards, and he was like, "Pick a card." And I was like, "Sure, man." I picked a card, and then I gave it back to him, and he's like, "All right, that empty beer can beside you." He's like, "Take that empty beer can and rip it open." And I was like, "All right." So I ripped open the empty beer can, and my card was in it, and I must have stood up and ran around in circles, screaming. I mean,
Amazing.
the level of how stoked I was on that, you know what I mean? And so I guess that's what I'm just trying to say. Like when I hit you up and I was like, "Gabriella, I love magic. Let's talk magic." It's like, it's not a joke. Like whenever I get to experience something like that, it really is like that. Yeah. Like you said, it's like like Santa Claus is real again.
Yeah.
So
Yeah, that's
anyway.
really awesome. And I love that. I mean, some people don't necessarily love magic. There's a lot of people that watch it with like the skeptic eye. So it's
Oh,
cool to
yeah.
be reminded of all the people in the world that love it and just want to feel joy and don't need to know all the answers. So I love that.
I guess that's also another way you could be a hobbyist, though. They have a character in, what's that movie that I just mentioned? Oh, Now You See Me. I think Morgan Freeman's character, his whole life is dedicated to ruining magic tricks. I guess some people, like, that's how they find joy. I don't know. But What was I going to ask? Oh, I think this kind of goes back to something we kind of started in the beginning, and I'm jumping around a little bit, and I hope you don't mind. But
No, no worries.
obviously, I'm a much more serious journalist than anyone over at the New York Times. But just out of curiosity, what was your New York Times feature about?
It was about the concept. I mean, the tagline for it was being a woman in magic is the hardest trick of all, which realistically isn't a statement that I truly agree with. But they were doing a feature piece on women in magic because it's been a super small demographic in the industry basically since the beginning of time. There's never really been too many women figures in magic that have been on the top. Like when I was growing up, there wasn't a woman in magic to look up to. It just hasn't really existed. There's never been a female Copperfield, female Houdini. And as magic is getting more space, online and in the TV world, people are starting to really notice how small the divide is and how small, sorry, so how small that percentage and how small that group is. And so she did a piece on kind of the some of the women who are doing really well in it and what it's been like for them finding their journey into it, which was a bit more of a sad, harder story, which isn't necessarily how it's been for me. But yeah, it was an interesting part. It was definitely a bucket list item, so I was happy I got to be a part of it, and I think she did a great job with the article.
Yeah, definitely sounds like an honor, but also, I mean, they do have to recognize you are 50% of magic right now, dropping 500
Yeah,
shows a
I mean,
year.
no one told no one told them that ahead of time.
And also, I read it in your bio. I mean, doing the Houdini straitjacket suspended escape at 14. If you don't mind, I'd asking a little bit, like, how did you even learn? I mean, did you have a mentor at that point? Like, how did you learn that?
I had some people in my life helping me at the time, but it was not as the learning process was nowhere near as glamorous or as cool as the final sentence of it sounds. When I fell in love like with the magic history world and discovered Houdini and decided it was something that I wanted to do, I knew nothing and I didn't know anyone that could help. And even when I'd asked people at the time, they weren't really keen on it. I was this up and coming, really young performer who did these card tricks and who was really passionate, and they wanted to keep that frame on me as long as possible. They're like, don't do that, don't go that route. There were just so many cooks in the kitchen trying to decide where to go. So people weren't really open to helping me with that idea. So I started that by hanging upside down on monkey bars in the playground is where that started. Is I started hanging upside down. I'm like, is this something I can even do? And then we have a playground in my backyard, and I used to tell my parents, I'm like, just check on me every like 30 minutes, make sure. Like I knew nothing. And then I started going into circus gyms and started asking people for more help, got suspended upside down. I had to get the straitjacket custom made because I couldn't find one that was small enough for me at the time. And it was really, I just had this end goal in mind and I figured I was going to get there, but it was, I knew nothing in the beginning. I had to get all the sponsors and funding for myself. I did all the promotion for itself. I figured out all the rigging. I hired a rigger. I hired a team. But I knew, yeah, I knew nothing. And it was the biggest learning curve that I had gone through, obviously, at the time in my life. And it was something I was just really proud of because I felt like I had to put a lot of the pieces together on my own. But it wasn't, I'm going to do this thing. Now let's train for it. It was, let's try.
Yeah. And actually going back to something you said in there, I find it heartening to know that it was difficult to find a straitjacket small enough.
You know, crazy
That
tiny people. I don't know.
would be horrible to know that there's like a lot of straitjackets available for small 14-year-olds. There
Yeah.
shouldn't be. So it's good
I
you had
called
to
around. I called around. I tried.
It's good you had to get that custom made. That shouldn't be something that should be readily
Yeah.
available. I was just kind of thinking this is totally different, but I was just trying to think, like, when I was that same age, I would have been like, that's when I would have been like learning how to kick flip. And I think there's a parallel a little bit, because skateboarding is one of those things, there's a lot of practice until you get a payoff.
Yeah.
But then once I heard you talk a little bit more, I was like, nah, it's not the same. Because yes, like, when I wanted to kickflip, I had to spend every single day for a month, like, and for hours until I like started landing my kickflips. But it was a little bit different because, like, I wasn't doing it completely alone and doing it like a crazy thing that nobody else, like, I was like surrounded by other people also trying to do the same thing. It's so that's a lot of dedication. We're like,
Yeah,
What
but I mean, I get what you're saying, and part of it is still learning. It's like the idea of not knowing if something's going to work or when it's going to work, and just kind of persevering and being determined and knowing what the end goal looks like and just every day going at it. So I get that. It's just kind of being in the beginner phase, which is a place I really love to be. So, and
Yeah.
I suck at skateboarding, and trust me, I've tried.
I find that hard to believe. I would have assumed it's like, because you do dirt bikes, like.
Yeah. Oh, I love skateboarding. I'm just insanely bad, really bad, but I love it. And every season, trust me, I face plant
If you
with
ever have a
pride.
year where you're not like out touring 500 shows, maybe like I'm sure someone with your dedication, you could probably get a pretty solid repertoire of tricks in a short period of time. Especially like, I mean, come on, you're doing like motocross type stuff. I mean,
Yeah, no,
that's.
I'd love to try. I mean, I really love the thing is I'm terrible at it, but I love sucking at something. Like last season I started snowboarding and I was terrible at it. And I only started dirt biking a couple years ago and I sucked at it, and I still don't think I'm remarkable at it, but I
Yeah.
love being terrible at something, because when you're really bad, you can still see the progression. Like you can notice it every time you do it that you get a little better. But when you're kind of flushed out and great at something, it's just fine-tuning. But I love seeing the progression of being terrible and slightly getting less terrible. So I would totally do it.
It's funny you would say that. I always feel like there's so much synchronicity on this podcast where especially with like someone like you, where it's kind of like this is kind of came out of nowhere. And
Yeah.
I was like, yo, your video is rad. And you're like, cool, your podcast is rad. Let's just do this. And they're like, but like I'm on like my vibe right now in life is the same thing where I'm in love with the beginner mentality. I realize like it's like, I always want to be doing something that I suck at.
Yeah.
And it just I feel like it enhances everything else, and it even enhances the things that you're already good at, because you're like it can I don't know, I have a whole
Yeah,
right now
no, I totally agree. I love it.
the beginner mindset is just a great way to keep your mind like fresh and like ready to learn. And this actually there was another thing I wanted to ask you that kind of goes back to kind of the New York Times thing and some of the stuff I said about the movies, and that's like the. This is not necessarily entirely like all about, a gender thing, but in your videos it comes up, and that's why I'm going to bring it up. It's
Yeah.
and I know there's countless of hours that go into perfecting a trick, but there's also the element of showmanship, and you have a great ability to handle audience participants that want to act like clowns. And which I kind of wanted to ask, what is your method or maybe mindset for keeping the show going when an audience member wants to be a dipshit?
Yeah, I mean, I love it. And for me, I can't exactly say they're terrible people trying to ruin the show, because without prompt, there is no response. And a lot of the comedic value that I have in my show at times can be in that response. So I have to be grateful for that. And I can't be set up without that there.
Yeah.
And some of it, you just have to understand almost no one in that audience has ever been on stage before. A lot of them are drinking, and it's not always the fact that they want to try and ruin the show or be a bad person. It is just nerves. It's being in a weird position, especially with the handcuff routine or something like that. For people that aren't familiar, it's a routine where I have two volunteers handcuff me and I get in and out of the handcuffs, and it's this kind of comedic joke. But
Yeah.
it's most of them are there with their wives or their girlfriends. Now they're on stage with this young girl. They're handcuffing her. They've never been on stage. You anything, so many things can be said, and I can't, there is a line that can be crossed. But I mean, I have comments on those videos where people are like, they should be burnt at the stake. These are the worst kind of people in the world. They're awful. You should hang them. And I'm like, they're just, people that have
Yeah.
been put in an offbeat scenario and they're responding in a slightly drunken way. But I think it's important for an audience to know that no matter what happens, no matter what goes on in the show, that I'm the person who's in control and it's going to keep going. Like they're good. Like they don't have to feed into the uncomfortable moments. They don't have to stay there too long. When they're watching the show, they know that no matter what happens, no matter what's said, it's under control and you're good and you're going to be entertained and we've got it under wraps. And this person that you're watching, she's good.
Yeah.
So I like that. I mean, and I have so much fun with it. I mean, I love hecklers. There's a point where it's, too much and needs to be stopped and it can all be done in a comedic, nice way. But I love it. I love picking volunteers that are like that. I love having fun with it. I'm not scared of it. I've had moments in shows where I've picked volunteers and I've said some offbeat things and people come up after and they're like, "Are you okay?" And I get it. It's because I'm young that people are, worried about it, and it can be like some people feel like it's harassy and people have all these opinions, but It's fun for me and I love it and it's my style and I perform in a very like stand-up comedy kind of way, so I like it.
Well, that's first of all, I love everything you just said. Second of all, I have a ton of friends that do stand-up comedy, and that's a lot of the guests on the show are comics, and so I'm very familiar with like that form of heckler. And but I was, you know, I guess maybe what struck me a little bit is like I was like, hey, this is magic, you know, this is sacred. But no, you're right. Like, and you do handle it. I guess one of the ones I saw that I thought was very funny. You had some guy on. I don't know what trick you were performing because the video doesn't show the whole trick. It's just you just like you said, you know, like I'm in charge. I'm handling the show. No one needs to worry. But you had the guy stand back to back, and he like starts trying to like rub butts, and you're like, we don't have to rub butts. And then you're like, do you work out? And he's like, yeah. And then you look at the audience, and you're like, no, he doesn't. So I thought it was, I don't know, it was a soft jab. But then I appreciate too what you just said, that like that guy probably is up there really, really nervous and never been on stage and is just acting out because he's like, or maybe like freaking out. So that's a
Yeah,
whole.
no, it's and you got to find that line too. And as long as they're enjoying it and having fun, then the audience is. And sometimes people need to be put down a little. But I mean, even with a volunteer like that, the first thing I would do walking off stage is shake his hand and just, you know, and sometimes the audience sees that or they don't, but it just kind of establishes that connection of this kind of weird, maybe funny moment happened on stage, but it could be, you know, it's sarcastic, but it could, you know, people have feelings and whatever. So the first thing I do after I end the show, anytime I have a volunteer on stage like that, is just be like, we're good, you're good.
Yeah. Yeah, no, and I just, yeah, I think sometimes I can also be one of those people that everything's black and white. I'm like, that guy's a jerk or whatever. And I admire your ability to see the full picture and be like, that guy was nervous. You know, he's like, you like you said, like his wife or his girlfriend's in the audience and he doesn't want to look like an idiot. And then he, you know, so that's cool. Because I've
And
had.
they also have no idea what's going to happen. And that's the difference between me and them that I think performers forget all the time is you do the show so many times, you know, every beat, every moment, you have a response to everything, you know, everything. And they have no idea what's happening. And there's a lot of pieces of magic and routines where like volunteers are in unique positions, like two people standing next to each other or standing back to back. It's like, you can't see the performer. You can't see what's going on. You don't know what's going to happen. So it's like, they are so out of their element that stupid things going to happen. Like just give them some grace and have fun with it.
Because this is just recently I went and did some karaoke, and I know that I'm not the greatest singer in the world, but like I, you know, I went on stage and I kind of sucked. I was like more than usual, like more than I had, more than, okay, how about this, more than I had intended to suck. And then I walked off the stage and I was like, everybody hates me, oh, I'm so embarrassed. And I was like that was like a voluntary, deliberate decision I made to go sing karaoke in front of this crowd. So even in the tiniest moments, that feeling of being in front of a group can really get you. Well, obviously, I doubt it affects you. You seem like probably the stage is maybe one of the most comfortable places in the world for you. Is that fair to
Yeah,
say?
it's. I mean, it's on stages before the show and after the show is a bit of a vulnerable place, because I'm really just who I am on stage. I'm very conversational. And for me, it's like I'm hanging out with the audience and it's this comedy fun conversation that's going on and magic is like my tool to do it. But it's really just I'm going out there. I'm having fun with these people. We're all kind of on the same playing field. But it is really just being a super exposed raw version of yourself. So when you say something that doesn't land perfectly or you don't have a perfect show, it's hard at times to not take that personally. So while the stage is my playground, it doesn't always go perfectly. And so there are those moments definitely where it does take a toll on you. And I get that. And everything when you're on stage is amplified because your adrenaline is so high. You're standing in front of this room and everyone's watching you. So every reaction feels 10 times stronger than what it was if you were in the audience, you know, having that reaction. So yeah, I get it. It's a weight and that never goes away. You just kind of learn to brush it off and keep treading.
Man, you're making me want to get back on stage again so bad. But
you got to do it. But that's all you got to do. Is no matter what happens, no matter how shit it is, no matter how much you think you suck, if you just keep getting back on stage, you keep having bad shows and then keep getting back on stage again.
Yeah, get back on the horse. But hey, this is not about me and me wanting to be on stage. This is about you. So, okay, now tell me the secrets to all your tricks. Okay,
okay,
I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. But seriously, what is the most difficult trick you've learned, like in your opinion?
I'm not sure if there's a specific effect that's been super hard to learn. I think it's been more of like the flight time and performance skills, you know, like figuring out who I am on stage
Yeah.
and being cool with that. So I guess it's kind of a derailing the answer, but I think for the most part is magic's it's there's complex elements of it, and there's manipulation and harder card effects that I don't really necessarily do. But in the world of like the kind of stage magic, parlor magic that I do, it's here's a trick, you learn the effect, you apply the effect. And that's kind of a straightforward process with some learning curve in it. But then it's like the performance of it. It is learning what to keep, what to take away, learning to watch yourself perform, which is the worst thing in the world. And being okay with like critiquing yourself and taking away parts and figuring. And the thing for me that I talk about is because I started performing when I was so young, well, I can say I was myself on stage. Who I was as a person was changing all the time and so rapidly. And so it made me have to be so in tune with who I was as a person to be able to apply that to my performing on stage. So it was like really having a lot of that alone self-talk conversations of who the fuck am I? What do
Yeah.
I want to show to people? What do I not want to show to people? So the hardest part of that has just been knowing that and being vulnerable and being okay with all of that.
Yeah. It's funny. I'm just thinking about like, because you're 20, you've got a decade career in magic, and I'm thinking about myself at 20, like, drinking a 40 by a dumpster, would be like something like that I would be likely to be doing rather than performing, six shows in a day. So it's just, I don't know. Different folks, different strokes, man.
You know, there's no timeline for life. You just gotta ride the wave.
So, like I told you earlier, about my dear friend that blew me away with the playing card in the beer can, which I can almost tell by your face. You're like, yeah, I know what he did, but I don't want to know.
I'll just tell you, don't worry.
But is there an illusion that you've ever witnessed that you have no idea how that trick was performed? Has anyone really like just had you completely baffled where you're like,
Yeah, all the time. I mean, I can't think of one at the moment, probably a lot more when I was younger, but being fooled as a magician is one of the coolest things in the world
yeah.
because you basically know all the answers to impossibility. And then when you find something that still gets you, it is like so overwhelmingly rewarding. I'm a kid again. This is the greatest thing. You were God, this is it's really great. And there's a difference in magic for what we call laymen, so just everyday people, and then magic for magicians. So when magicians are performing for other magicians, there it's kind of a different feel, it's a different vibe. They use different techniques because you know what magicians know and you try
Yeah.
to use it against them. So magic for magicians is like the regular people wouldn't care, be as impressed, and it's usually much harder than magic for laymans, except they wouldn't appreciate it or care because they don't know the depths of it. But when you're, you know, you can appreciate magic in such a different light because it's like you're watching it with X-ray vision. When you see it, you know pretty much everything that's going on. You know, you see the skeletons and the bones of it. And when you find something that you haven't seen before and it blows you away, it is one of the coolest things in the world.
Yeah, kind of like in The Prestige. Is that the one where Hugh Jackman, like, the trick is he actually does die in the
Yeah,
trick, and
though
like that's
that's a
what.
great movie. One-upping each other in that, it's a super impressive movie.
Oh yeah, doesn't is oh because he has a nemesis, isn't that Christian
Yeah.
Bale?
Yes.
I have to watch that again, even
It's a yeah,
though
it's a great movie.
I'm not trying to support the patriarchy. Don't get me wrong, but that movie is really, really good, and I want to watch it again. So,
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's a good movie when you forget enough of the plot to watch it again and be re-reminded, be like, oh, this is what's gonna
yeah.
happen.
Oh shoot! I should have said spoiler alert. Hey, spoiler alert! Hugh Jackman, maybe he doesn't die. I don't know. Haven't.
This is actually just a part of the trick,
This is
and
part of
you don't even know.
the. You don't know shit. If you haven't seen that movie, it came out.
It's not even Hugh Jackman.
Hugh Jackman's not in that? Oh, wait. Anyway, guys,
Good.
Gabriella wasn't even born when that movie came out. So if you haven't seen it yet, that's not my fault.
Yeah. That's fair.
Here's a kind of, this might be like kind of a weird offshoot. Well, it definitely is. Is mentalism considered a branch of magic?
It is totally, yeah, that's like mind reading, mentalism. It's a yeah, it's a STEM for sure.
Do you mess with it at all, or?
A little bit, yeah. I mean, It's usually more serious, but it can be done in a comedic tone. Like any form of mind reading, you're thinking of something. I'm gonna guess what you're thinking is technically mentalism. But it's kind of a propless thing. Like usually it's something that it should just be simple and done, where the concept of is somebody's gonna think of it and I'm gonna know what they're thinking is really the root of it, which is kind of magic in itself. I had to dive in it pretty heavy when I was younger, when I was like 15, maybe a little younger. I got a carpal tunnel diagnosis in both of my hands from
Oh no.
practicing too much.
Oh
Like
no.
a 9-year-old pianist level of damage to my hands, which I had no idea how I accomplished. And so they're
Wow.
like, you can't use cards, you can't do escapes. You're like, they put both of my hands in splints for 6 months. They're like, you can't do anything. So I'm like, you know what? I'm gonna be a mind reader. There's an option for me there. So I dove into that world a little bit, not for too long, obviously, because I preferred the hands-on playfulness of
Oh
everything else.
yeah.
But
But I will say this, going back to the movies, and I will stop continuously referring to these movies, that at the beginning I was like, too much patriarchy. And then I'm like, but except let me one exception is the Woody Harrelson character, where he's a mentalist. I love Woody Harrelson, and he's my favorite character in that movie, and he's pretty much my favorite character in anything he's in. But when I remember when I saw that, I was like, oh, I want to be a mentalist. But is so yeah, so I guess you said that there's the mind reading, but there's other, is there like maybe also possibly like elements of like maybe kind of like being suggestive, like being like maybe trying to like get someone to do something or say something. Is that kind of
Yeah,
a
there can be, or even the impression of it, like making people feel like they're choices on their own, or having people say a bunch of things and then being like, I knew you're gonna say all that before you even said it. So there's that too. So it's definitely a part of it.
Okay, well then, clearly, you have a ton of natural talent at whatever you put your mind to. Can you use mentalism real quick to ask the listeners to please leave a 5-star rating and a nice review for My Views Are My Own podcast on their podcast app or wherever they're listening to this episode?
Yeah. I already know they're gonna do it. I feel it.
Cool. Oh, so you just mentalized it already?
Yeah, they're doing it. They're doing it.
I feel like it was a team effort.
Otherwise, Santa is in their kitchen now and he's real and he's gonna hurt them.
Oh no. Guys, if you don't want
Not
Santa
a
in your
threat.
kitchen, hurry up, leave a 5-star rating right now. It helps the podcast. Let's talk about the future. Do you have a dream magic trick that you want to perform, or something that you're in the process of putting together for a future performance?
Yeah, so much. I mean, I could talk about the future for the rest of my life, and I
Oh,
probably will.
yeah.
I think for me, it's about creating those marks in history and in time that are just mine. I mean, that it's the Harry Houdini straitjacket escape, the Harry Houdini water torture cell. Like what he did in his lifetime were things that didn't exist before. No one had hung themselves upside down to escape from a straitjacket before him. You know, this was something that he created, and he looked at the world in its current state and kind of used that against them to create something that people would be interested in and talk about and want to see. So it's for me in my life, I just. I'm now trying to create as many of the Gabriella Lester this and Gabriella Lester that, rather than doing Houdini's this, doing Copperfield's this, doing this performer's that. It's just about what do I do in my lifetime to look at the world in its current state and use it to create something that's never been seen before, that's mine, and that will go on to be recreated in history. So it's making those things happen.
Can you maybe give us like a hint of like any like I know there's a lot of secrecy and you have to shroud your tricks, but maybe like a hint of some of is it going to be like is it going to be an escape? Is it going to be
Yeah, it might be. It will be, you know, I want them all to be their own headline in some way, so big in a sense. I think for me, it's important to create the physical and literal, non-literal image of giving, you know, the next generation of performers someone and something to look up to because they've never had that before. So when I think about creating a stunt or a trick or an image, I physically want to have the image of me here in the sky doing whatever I'm doing, giving the next generation of performers something that they can see and visually look up to, and making that a sentence that I say and a thing that you can actually see. So some form of escape, some form of stunt, some form of piece of magic that's suspended or in the sky, you know, just because that's such a strong image, you know, and the photo of that is such like a lasting thing.
Yeah.
Stuff like that, some escapes, and then
Yeah,
stuff.
you gotta like be creative, because I'm sure like a lot of things, like somebody got to it first and maybe didn't do it as cool as you would have done it, but you don't want to, like you want to do a NBD. You want to never been done. That's the dream.
Yeah, or at least putting my own spin on it, or doing something that's like, but she did it like that, or she did it this way, or there was that, and just having enough bite on it to make it memorably my own and not just another version of something.
Oh, I'm all over the place, but actually I have one thing I was gonna say when we first started talking about straitjackets,
Yeah.
because synchronicity is I'm that's my own little personal belief in like everyday magic. That's, like just it's just there in the universe. Like I do believe in that there is, some real magic floating around in our lives. And for me,
Yeah.
that's things that some people will take them as a coincidence. I prefer not, I prefer to be like, nah, that was meant to be that way. And the thing was, this is kind of silly, but this is like a couple days before I talked to you. I was watching Drunk History, like an old one, and they were doing Buster Keaton, and
Yeah.
his parents were best friends with Harry Houdini, so Harry Houdini was basically his uncle, and had taught him how to escape a straitjacket as a child, and this came into play later in his life. He got and his career took a huge nosedive. He recovered in the career, came back, but he got locked in a sanitarium and they thought he was insane, so they put him in a straitjacket. But what the people at the sanitarium didn't know is that he was raised by Harry Houdini, and as soon as they walked out of the room, he like
Very
threw the
cool.
straitjacket off and walked right out the front door. But I just thought that was kind of interesting, because it was
Yeah, that's really cool.
like 2 days before I talked to you, I had just watched the Buster Keaton Drunk History, and I was like, that's kind of cool. This is just shot in the dark here, because talking about future performances, and I don't want to blow up your spot if this is kind of what you were thinking, but have you ever thought about combining like motorcycles and magic into one show, since you got
Yeah,
this?
I get asked that all the time because it's my other main passion. So I'm working on a couple of different ways of doing it. It has been done in a bunch of different ways, but I definitely want to put them in. I love it. I want to ride into my show and ride out of my show on a bike. It's just so, me, and it's such a huge passion in my life. So I'd love to incorporate it.
Oh yeah. Well, Gabriella, I have one thing to tell you. We're getting
Okay.
dangerously close to the lightning round. So I have to
Okay.
tell you about the lightning round. I don't write the lightning rounds. They're almost always written by co-producer Colleen. And I just so what I do is it's a series of questions, and you answer as fast as you can. Don't think. It's just
Okay.
blah, 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 rapid fire.
Okay.
I
Okay.
just realized that she wrote it on a notebook. It did not put it in this room. So will you give me 1 second? I'm gonna grab it and
Do
I'll
it. Yeah,
run right.
no worries. Do your
I'll
thing.
be lightning fast.
Okay.
Okay. I've got great news and even better news. The great
Okay,
news
okay.
is I found the lightning round. And the even better news is you got a Mad Lib, which is my favorite type of lightning round to get. If you're not
Okay.
familiar, are you familiar with Mad Libs?
Yeah, I think so. It's just a fill in the thing, right?
I just say to you, I say like noun, adjective, verb, and you say
This is where I
whatever.
have to remember what nouns and adjectives are.
Everyone hates. So even though Mad Libs are my favorite because we end up with a cool, fun story at the end, people always, and I have so many authors and professors on here, and they're like, God damn it, what's an adjective?
Yeah.
So do not in any way feel like
It won't make the story won't make any sense.
every single person always feels put on the spot by these, but they're worth it. This is called
Okay.
The Case of the Missing Assistant, a Mad Lib story by co-producer Colleen, co-written by Gabriella Lester. Are you ready?
No.
Adjective.
Happy. That's an adjective, right?
Yes, it's a
Okay.
it's and it's my favorite one. Another adjective.
Angry.
And a person's name.
Martha.
I have known so many people named Martha in my life, which is weird because it's
I
kind
haven't
of a
met one.
that's I'm gonna you know I'm gonna stop talking about those
You gotta share them.
Marthas right now. Noun.
Brother.
And another noun.
It's Paris.
Did you say pears, like the fruit?
Paris.
Oh, Paris, the city. Animal, plural.
Dogs.
Article of clothing.
Boxers.
That could
Oh
mean so many different things. Well, I mean, I guess it could mean three different things. Okay, adjective.
Sad.
And another adjective.
Round.
And a number.
42.
Name.
Brian.
And exclamation slash magical phrase. So, you know, abracadabra.
Huzzah.
Huzzah. That was actually in my head. I think you mentalismed me.
Yes.
Sound.
Buzz.
Assistant's name. So this will be the name of the assistant that this story, I think, is about.
Lucy.
Other magical phrase.
Yeehaw.
Yeah. That's if you pull something out of a cowboy hat. Number.
Number? 13.
And adjective?
Big.
And another adjective.
Ugly.
Okay, and then this is Lucy again, goes here. Snack food.
Goldfish.
And
the crackers, not the actual fish.
I love goldfish. Fast food restaurant.
A restaurant? KFC.
KFC. I can't say that I love KFC. Okay, I know this seems like we're going on for a long time. We're literally almost there. All right, this is Lucy again. And word, phrase, an audience would say.
Woohoo. I've never got a woohoo, but I hope one day I do.
If I'm ever at one of your shows, I swear to God, I am going to yell woohoo.
Good, good.
Also, I think I got mentalismed again because I was thinking woohoo. All right. Ooh, insulting name.
Becca. Wait, or Becca? Just like a slur name?
like dickhead.
Okay, sorry.
I was like, sorry, damn, you don't like Becca. Anybody named Becca?
Sorry to people named Becca.
I can think of one Becca I don't like. Sorry, go ahead.
Douche canoe. Let's do douche canoe.
Douche canoe. That's, I have not heard that in
what my dad calls me.
Okay. Thanks, Dad. Country.
Canada.
All right. And this is Lucy again, goes here. And final one, occupation.
Construction worker.
Construction worker? I like constructioner. Do you want to do constructioner?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Let's, because it just feels right to me. But that's also because I've already been mentalismed. So, okay. Everyone, prepare to be amused and amazed by The Case of the Missing Assistant, a Mad Lib story by co-producer Colleen, co-written by Gabriella Lester. Once upon a time, there was a happy magician named the Angry Martha, who was most famous for their trick where they used a brother and a Paris to cut their assistant in half. They also made dogs appear out of the boxers.
Oh,
they also could guess the exact card and say sad member of the audience. Oh, sorry. They also could guess the exact card any sad member of the audience had picked. It was round. People came to see the magician from all around the world and paid $42 to see their show. One night at a sold-out show, the magician planned to make their new assistant, Brian, disappear. The magician shouted, "Huzzah!" And suddenly there was a loud buzz. Everyone in the audience gasped when Lucy disappeared. What? Supposed to be Brian again. Thank God co-producer Colleen's in the other room and yelled that was supposed to be Brian again. Sorry.
Okay.
From here on out, Lucy
it's
is
okay.
Brian.
Lucy appeared and then boof.
Everyone in the audience gasped when Brian disappeared. Then the magician shouted, "Yeehaw," but nothing happened. For 13 minutes passed. The audience was big. The magician was ugly. Then they saw something out of the corner of their eye. They ran backstage to find Brian standing around eating a bag of goldfish from KFC. The magician was furious. "You're fired," they yelled. Brian was upset and ran back to the stage. To the magician's surprise, the audience erupted in applause. "Woohoo," they yelled. The magician took a bow and said, "A magician never reveals their secrets," and ushered their assistant off stage. You're still fired, you douche canoe. The magician went on to wow audiences in places like Canada, and Brian quit magic and started a career as a constructioner.
That's amazing. Can I
That's
use that?
absolutely. That's
Welcome to the show, everybody. Let me tell you a story.
you co-wrote that story, and it is now going to be on the internet forever. So,
That's great. The
yeah.
audience was big. The
I
magician was ugly.
love that part. Oh, okay. And I love when they said that went on to play shows in places like
Really
Canada.
making it big.
Gabrielle, I have one last question for you. It's the most important question of the day, and it is this: where can people find you, follow you, and if they want to come see one of your amazing and incredible magic shows, how can they make that happen for themselves?
Yeah, I mean, I'm 20, so social media is the best way. I keep all my accurate up-to-dates there on all my social platforms, and they're all at the Gabriella Lester, because Gabriella Lester was already taken, so I don't classify. But it's at the Gabriella Lester on everything. My website's gabriellalester.ca. Everything is, for the most part, pretty up-to-date, but follow me, say hi, hang out, come to a show. Just,
Hell yeah.
yeah.
All right. You guys heard it here first. Go see Gabriella's show. It's going to blow your mind. And Gabriella, thank you so much for being on the podcast today. This was actually so much fun, and I really, really enjoyed meeting you.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
Bye.
Bye bye.